March 1st meeting of the Clean Water Commission is officially open. We will start a roll call. Mark? Can you hear me? Is he on mute?
Mark Schneider, are you there?
Okay. Okay, Jeremy Ernest.
Present.
David McDick. Devitt, sorry.
Devitt, yep, that would be me.
Holly Norris.
Present.
Dick Rylander.
Here.
Okay. If everyone has not heard, Kate has resigned. She has moved out of Vancouver into Portland. So she resigned her commission. And we will talk about that.
Okay.
Filling her position later on. Has everyone had a chance to review the minutes from January? Are there any suggestions, comments, or revisions?
I make a motion that we accept as presented.
Seconded.
Okay, the motion has been made to accept the minutes. Okay, do we have any public comments? Bless you. There's no one in the audience. We have a guest speaker tonight, Ashley King from the Stream Team. Are you ready to do your presentation?
Yeah. So I wasn't quite sure what to expect tonight, but so if there's anything that you want me to talk more about or anything you just want me to skip over, let me know. I'm happy to kind of show this to what you're interested in learning more about. Basically what I kind of have laid out is kind of what we do, why we do it, and then how the public can get involved, whether that's through individually your role of myself. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Street Team program, we are a volunteer-based program with Clark Public Utilities. So we do stream restoration. So we do things like planting native trees, removing invasive weeds. And basically the work that we do is a way to improve both water quality and water quantity. So most people think of trees as being, you know, wildlife habitat, improving air quality, things like that, but it also protects our drinking water as well. And since 1992, when we were founded, we have planted over 900,000 trees, restored over 400 acres of land, planted along 15 miles of stream, stabilized over 10,000 feet of stream bank, and helped over 300 private landowners, all with the help of about 1,000 volunteers or more every year, or at least 1,000 volunteers recently. That's when we got started, we didn't have 1,000 volunteers. So AmeriCorps members are a core part of our program. They're integral to reaching those numbers. So when we first started in 1992, it was a very small-scale project that we had. It was mostly a few utility volunteers coming out on the weekends to help plant trees or install livestock fencing, that type of thing. And then when we started partnering with AmeriCorps in 1997, it turned what was more of an informal, occasional thing into a formal program where we were really able to engage the community and get a lot more done. So now, with the help of our AmeriCorps members, we attend either hold ourselves or attend other events, over 80 events a year, over 1,000 volunteers. And that's our current group right there. So where do we work? We primarily work in the Salmon Creek watershed, this watershed right here. And that covers about 89 square miles, and it has pretty much every type of land use: rural, residential, forest, commercial, industrial. So as you can see, these little red circles are where we have knotweed control programs. I'll talk a little bit more about knotweed in a little bit. And these little blue guys are fish, and those represent where we've done some stream restoration work. So most of it is in the Salmon Creek watershed, although we've extended out to the east fork of the Lewis River watershed as well. why do we restore streams? So as a member of the utility, we provide water to the public utility does, and so we thought it made sense to protect the quality of the water that we provide to our customers. And so this here is a picture of the water cycle, what you might call a natural water cycle. So, you know, in a natural water cycle, you're going to see lots of green. You're going to see grass and trees and other plants. And in those green areas, they act like sponges that soak up all that water that comes down in the form of rain. But I'm sure you're familiar with the water cycle. It's basically the evaporation of water from things like the oceans and streams, condenses in the clouds. Once the clouds condense, comes down in the form of rain or snow. So not in a natural environment, most of that water is going to then infiltrate into the ground, collect in the groundwater and the aquifers, and that's where we get our drinking water from, the aquifer. And so then some of that's going to run off over top of the surface of the land and go straight into the streams and the creeks. And then that flows out to the ocean. But by and far, the majority of that water would soak into the ground under natural conditions. And then, so in the winter when we're getting lots of rain, the aquifers are going to get filled up with water. And then in the summer, when it's not raining as much, those streams and creeks are going to get that water. It's going to come from the aquifers where it's been stored. It's going to then kind of provide a steady trickle into those creeks and streams. So you usually wouldn't have all those streams and creeks drying up. But now we've changed our surroundings. We've taken out things like forests and wetlands and things and put in buildings and parking lots and roads. Usually what are called impervious surfaces, so surfaces that don't let that water infiltrate into the ground. So now, instead of having as much infiltration, we have a lot more runoff. So that means in the winter we're going to get a lot more flooding. That water, there's so much water going to hit the streams and creeks at one time that it's just going to come right back. It's not going to have the creeks and rivers can't hold it. And then also, since we don't get that infiltration, we're not recharging that groundwater. So then in the summer, we don't have that water to recharge our streams and creeks. So as a result, we end up having a lot more flooding in the winter and a lot less water in the summer. So so what we do is we go through and we plant trees. We try to restore some of that more natural ecosystem. So I'll talk a little bit about how trees help salmon. So a lot of times people go, great, trees, like I guess they have benefits, but how do they help salmon? Because salmon are in the water, trees are on the ground. But there's lots of different benefits. Most people think of protecting air quality. They do that because they convert the carbon dioxide that we breathe out into oxygen that we can breathe in. But they also provide shade over the water, which keeps the water cold. Cold air holds more oxygen than warm. Cold water holds more oxygen than warm water. So that's kind of a neat way that the trees help the fish. Their roots help hold soil in place, preventing erosion. So you're not getting as much dirt in the water, keeping the water cleaner. They provide habitat. They slow the flow of runoff. So the more trees that you have in the floodplains, the longer it's going to take that water to reach the streams and creeks. It has obstacles in the way. So the more time it has that it's flowing over ground, the more time it has to infiltrate into the ground. So the trees slow down that runoff, allow more water to infiltrate the groundwater, and they also filter out pollutants. So those are benefits of living trees, but the downed trees in the water actually have lots of benefits too. They create fish habitat in the stream. They have little nooks and crannies that the fish can hide in, the young fish can get away from predators. They also, again, slow the flow of water, so if the water is moving more slowly, it's easier for the fish to hang out there. They don't have to use as much energy to hang out there. But two, they also, it's protecting the stream banks from erosion, because the water's not going to be flowing fast and pulling as much dirt away from the sides. The decaying wood also provides nutrients to macro vertebrates, the aquatic insects, and other things that live in the water, which then in turn feed the fish. So there's actually lots of ways that the trees salmon. So if you're somebody like me, you're not like, oh, that's awesome, I really want to be a part of that. And well, you can. So there's lots of different ways to help bring salmon back to Sandy Creek. We plant native trees and shade the water and control erosion. So we are currently in planting season right now, and our biggest planting event of the year is Earth Day in April. I'll talk about that in just a minute. But we usually plant on average about 50,000 trees every year, so it's quite a few. And a lot of people go, oh, okay, well, you're doing mitigation for the utility. But the work that Street Team does is not in mitigation. Yes, the utility has to do mitigation work, but everything that Street Team does with our volunteer program, that is above and beyond what's required of us. So the 50,000 or so trees that we plant every year, that is not required of us, not mitigation. We also have our own nursery at the utility. So the branch is on 117th and Patton Parkway. tucked in the back there, we have our own native plant nursery, where we have tens of thousands of trees. The number varies season to season, how many we have back there. So we also have potting events where we have people help us get those trees that we're going to plant, and we have people help us get those ready to plant during the year. People really love these events. I think it's because they're so social, because rather than being all spread out in the field, you're all kind of, you know, clustered together around tables, so everybody's chatting and having a good time. You're outdoors, but you're under tents, so even if it's raining, you're at least staying somewhat dry. So we have a couple potting events coming up in March. And the potting events take one of two forms. We do live stake cuttings, which basically some trees, things like willows, can grow from cuttings that you take of prone trees. And so you just will have taken the cuttings in advance, and then folks are just basically putting on and pots of soil. And we also do up potting, where we start them out with small pots just so we can fit more into the nursery. And then as they get bigger, they need to be transferred into larger pots. So we do up potting events too. And then maintenance. There's no point in planting those trees if they're not going to survive. In fact, we have a really high survival rate because we do so much maintenance after the fact. We actually have a survival rate of about 90 to 92%, which industry standard is like 50 to 70%. Granted, in the years where we have super hot and dry summers, like the numbers might go down a little bit, but overall. So some of the maintenance that we do invasive removal. Knotweed here. He's watering the trees here. So in the summer when it's hot and dry, we want to make sure that they're getting established in their new trees. So we want to give them a fighting chance. We also mow and weed whack and that type of thing to kind of get rid of some of the recanary grass and other weeds that might otherwise compete with the trees. So the garlic mustard that you see in this she's pulling garlic mustard. This is a highly invasive weed, but it has a really weak root system, so it's really easy to pull. It's great for kids. We actually have an event coming up a week from Saturday, March 11th. We're going to do our first garlic mustard pull of the season, and we have a few of those.
And kids can come?
Yes, kids can come. So kids are welcome at almost all of our events. The only events that we don't allow small children is at the knotweed treatment events, because we're using herbicide. So you have to be 18 or over for that. And then the maintenance, the weed whacking and lawn mowing events, we don't allow kids because they're like industrial sized lawn mowers, and it's probably not a good idea to have little children running around like those. But the garlic mustard pull, the planting events, all of those are great events for families. And so let's see. And then knotweed is one of the other weeds that we're really focused on. So it is very pretty, but it's a very terrible weed. It looks kind of like bamboo, has a cane like bamboo, but instead of having that small leaf, it has a much larger leaf than bamboo. It can grow through concrete and asphalt. It can grow through the foundation of buildings. So it's really nasty. It can break, like a little piece, if it breaks off, it can regrow from that little piece. So we don't recommend manual removal. We do recommend treatment. So we have two ways. Our preferred method is using an injection gun. It's hard to see in that picture, but it's kind of like a water gun, but it has a needle on the end. So you can put the needle right into the cane of the plant, and you're only getting that one plant. With new growth or anything that's been treated in past years and has not completely died back, it usually comes up pretty small, so it's not big enough to inject anymore, so then we use that patch for
it. So in a natural habitat, is it bred?
So in Asia, where it's from, it's not that bad. And there's lots of theories on why sometimes when plants come to a new area, they're super invasive, but the general accepted idea is that where they're from, they've grown up with the other plants and animals, and so there's a kind of a balance between those plants and animals, and then when it comes to a new area where the animals and plants aren't used to it, all of a sudden it might be, not all of them, but sometimes they just have a way of just taking off and beating the competition because the others don't know how.
Particularly not due to the impermeable surfaces.
There you go. Well, I'm not suggesting destroying infrastructure. I'm just saying it's a side effect of the impervious surfaces that there are.
That's not a good idea.
especially around foundations.
Yeah, no. It's pretty nasty. It's relatively new, and so we feel like we still have a fighting chance of kind of getting rid of it completely. Okay. Unlike things like blackberry, which unfortunately, aren't pretty much here to stay. I mean, we could try to, you know, get rid of rid of some, but we're probably never going to get rid of the blackberry completely. So we monitor for knotweed in the first half of the summer, kind of go out and find where it is, and we use a GPS unit to mark where it is, and then later we know when it's the treatment window, the best time, the most effective time to treat, we know where to go back and treat, and that's kind of late summer, early fall. We also do monitoring of different forms. We do water quality monitoring at a bunch of our restoration sites. We do red surveys. So reds are the nests where salmon lay their eggs. So we go out and look to see whether we find salmon nesting at our project sites. And we also do bird survival monitoring. So if you know anything birders, are you a good birder?
I was going to ask about the water quality. How is it that you guys specifically monitor the water quality?
So there's different parameters that we measure. We look at things like pH, temperature, turbidity, so that's kind of how much material is suspended in the water, how much like dirt and other things. We do send out some testing. I'm not sure what all they test for. I think people probably want some other things.
Okay. Is some of that done by volunteer teams too? Or
sorry, what?
Is some of the monitoring done by volunteer teams too? Or
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go out quarterly and we take volunteers with us and they help us collect the data.
And then who do you guys submit it to?
Oh, gosh. I don't know who the... I want to say it's the Addy Lab is who does the tests for us. We don't do that in-house. And then we do this in partnership with Clark County Environmental Services, and we do some work in partnership with them on the water quality monitoring. Environmental education is also a huge part of the screen team. We want to make sure that we're engaging the community in what we do. If we're just doing this on the sidelines and we're not getting people invested in it, then we're not going to really have that much impact. We really want to make sure that there's support for it and that other people are kind of doing their part as well. So we'll go out, we're at things at the Columbia River Watershed Festival where we do the life cycle obstacle course. Here kids get to go on salmon hats and they get to run through an obstacle course and face the different obstacles that fish will face in their lifetimes. We have this big salmon called Sammy the Salmon that we make scales for, or kids make scales for. He has been revamped, so now he has reusable scales, and we're not just ditching plates after each time. And then the Street Stewards Program is a great series of environmental workshops for adults. So basically, they're offered free of charge and cover things like geology, hydrology, native plants, native animals, stream restoration, naturescaping, and people are kind of supposed to go through the whole series. I mean, they have to miss one or two classes, so that's fine. But like, it's meant to be kind of taken as a whole. And then, since it's free of charge, we do ask that you volunteer in exchange for the class. And this is a great way to kind of get some really knowledgeable volunteers that can then take on leadership roles within the team. So the classes they take. And then, since we have two really big events every year. So we have several events throughout the year, usually out on average about two a month. But then there's two really big ones. There's Make a Difference Day, which is in October, which is a large-scale planting. We usually have between 200 and 250 people that come out. And at the end of the day, we have live music, lunch, there's a volunteer recognition ceremony. And then this year is our 25th anniversary, so we're going to do a big 25th anniversary celebration. And then Earth Day. This is by far our largest. This is coming up on April 22nd. And this is a large-scale planting event as well as a community fair. We have over 300 volunteers that sign up to plant trees with us, and then we have another 50 or so that help us actually run the event because the tree planting goes from 9 to 12:30. And then there's also a fair that goes on from 10 to 2. So the fair is free. It's open to the public. You don't have to be a volunteer to come to the fair. We have about 50 organizations that are out there with tables and kids' activities. There's live entertainment. We have a Birds of Prey demonstration from the Portland Autobahn. We've got Mr. Lizard has reptiles and amphibians. There's a juggling act. There's Recycle Man, if you guys are familiar with Recycle Man, here in the county. He'll come out and he's going to be doing some live music with recycled instruments and all with environmental themes. So this is a lot of fun. All of our volunteers get a free t-shirt and a free lunch. And last year we had between 1,600 and 1,800 people out at the fair. So it really has gotten huge.
Yes, Clark County Public Utility sponsors all of it?
So the Clark Public Utilities and also in partnership with Clark County Public Works. So, yeah, so this is the two of us, and we put on this event every year. So we have grants and things, too. So, like I was saying, this is great for families. We get, you know, kids of all sizes that are coming out and helping in the style of this photo, although we're not actually recommend that a child is small. So it's really great because, you know, kids come out to these things year after year and really kind of get that connection with nature as a result. We've got lots of community support. We have, you know, Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts that come out, Lions Club, Flips Burgers for the volunteers. We get lots of school groups that are coming out. The Wild Fish Rescue comes and does fish releases with us at our big events every year, so that's really great. And business support, too. So, yeah, definitely got to give us a shout out to all the businesses that give in kind donations. Some of them even provide sponsorship money to do that. And I really think, you know, this is from Heidi Schultz from Portland, who just basically was saying that they just were planning on coming out and just doing one event with us one time. And now they come out every year because they had such a great time. So I really think it is kind of a win-win situation. So these are some of our upcoming events. We've got two tree pottings in March, garlic mustard pull starting in March, and then Earth Day in April. But if you're interested, we've got all sorts of flyers back there. I have a full calendar of them back there, green tea brochures about Earth Day. If you want to bring a couple of these, know a good bulletin board to put one on, feel free to grab one to bring with you the next time you head to one of those spots. And with your help, we can bring Salmon back to Salmon too. So, you can get a hold of me. I have business cards too here if you wanted to get a hold of me to either find out more about the program, get signed up to volunteer, if there's any kind of way that you could, you know, wind up explore partnering on something, I'd be happy to talk about that too at some point. Does anybody have any questions?
So when you talk about Salmon Creek, I live out of town.
Okay.
So I go out past the Brush and Prairie, mm-hmm. drop down a little ridge, and on up. That whole section of the stream there is special.
Okay.
It flow rate's terrible. You know, in the summer, it turns this shades of green because of the poor water flow and high temperature. So you don't stretch that far out in the work that you do.
So here, let me go back to where we have some projects. And we're open to working in other areas. Basically, most of our work ends up being done on private land just because most of our work does end up being done on private land. We do some work on public land too. So the county or city of Battleground or whoever happens to be that owns.
Well, that's not the city, but it is county. It's incorporated
part of Clark County. And if that's an area that they're interested in us doing some work on, we might be able to. Basically, we just have to have permission from landowners before we can do any work. So let's see if you were saying.
So he went out 503 north.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hard to.
Probably.
So he's gonna be a little bit further east. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
It's still pretty bad on there.
Yeah. Anyway. So we go up 503 because as you go through our orchards,
mm-hmm.
And you go past, there's a Goodwill, and you go. Of course, we can talk about the flooding around that Goodwill that continues down, but that's not yours. And then as you go down, as you get to Brush Prairie, and then you go past Brush Prairie and it sort of dips down, there's a bridge, and then it comes back up.
And then where does that turn this way?
Yeah, so the sheriff's office was at 149th.
Yeah, where the gate is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then so if you keep going north,
yeah.
Just past there, it drops down. So the Salmon Creek piece that's down through there, for whatever reason, it's probably just a host of things over the years. You know. It just, in the summers, it's just.
Well, I was
going to
just, but why a lot of the impermeable surfaces? No? In the surrounding area? No.
No, that's still pretty rural out through that.
Right. I was thinking
but it's just the way, I'm sure it's just the way the water was doing.
Maybe.
We do have some product out there.
A plugged culvert.
No, this stream itself. I think that the whole piece in there is pretty darn flat, and it's fairly wide under that bridge.
So it's not flowing?
And so I just don't think it has good flow.
Oh.
And in the summers, of course, it is stagnant.
Huh.
So I don't see how any fish could survive it.
We do have some problems up there, actually. If you're talking about that little bridge right before it takes that big turn, we have a project off to the east there, and that's actually several landowners that all live along in that kind of newer subdivision. And we have done a project up there recently in the last few years. So we do some work out there. There are salmon that are up in the headwaters out east of there. So yeah, I'm happy for that.
And I was going to ask, you mentioned that you guys mostly do stuff with private landowners, but as a big corporation, I mean, it's great to help fix things after the fact, but one of the things I was curious about is, as a big corporation, do you guys do anything, I don't know how much, you know, building and extensive kind of, you know, stuff that our public utilities does, but do you guys do anything to prevent the prevent more impermeable surfaces, and do you kind of network with other big corporations that might kind of contributing to the actual problem?
That's a great question. We don't do as much of that. We do more of like the managing and the restoration side of things. But I mean, there are other organizations that kind of do things like that, or like try to, even if they're not going to be preventing it, but trying to like, they're like depave.
Right.
They don't do a whole lot. They do, I think they're more down in Portland based, but they are trying to encourage people to remove impermeable surfaces and replace them with permeable surfaces.
That's cool that public utilities can be an out of those, as far as that goes.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly you're running into that all the way into city and county governments that are the ones who are responsible for approving projects and in essence decommissioning to set up requirements that, you know, it's exceeding a certain life or a certain condition, then it has to be, et cetera. So I'm just guessing it's more of a governmental, not a utility.
Right.
But as far as an ally, though, would we, as far as, like, you know, preventing the impermeable surfaces, you know, is that something, do we have any aspect going towards that as far as the prevention? Or there's rules and stuff, right? There's regulations, there's stuff
sure.
like that.
There's new, in the code now, some new regulations about low-impact development.
Right.
So that's coming online.
That's marginal. Because you really have to find a way to influence city and county government.
It's a big thing.
Departments that actually approve the projects, and
that's a
massive lift.
Yeah.
You know.
It'd be good to know the codes and stuff and kind of what the standards are as far as, you know, this is where our problem starts.
It's a balance ultimately, though, isn't it? I mean, you've got to have jobs, and yet, so what's that sort of balance?
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Yeah.
Well, and some of this stuff is in flux a little bit because our illustrious number 45 just signed an executive order backing off some of the notion that the federal government could impose on private property owners and a few other things. That was pretty recent.
Yeah, the EPA's recent decision where.
Yeah.
Where they could potentially name any puddle as navigable waters.
Right, yeah. So they backed off of that with an executive order recently.
Yeah.
And, of course, that has some effect on, you know, this notion of stormwater. It doesn't take away the responsibility of the problem. It just sort of takes away maybe some authority over, you know, trying to get rectification for the problems. So a lot of this is in flux and remains to be seen, but I don't think it really changes our mission any. I think we still want to talk to people and outreach. And so on the 22nd of the month, last month, Eric Lambert held an event down at the Water Resources Center that was pretty widely attended, and Andrew was there, and I was the only attendee from the commission there. And Ashley made mention at the time of the event, the Earth Day event on the 22nd of April. And because of her mentioning that, so we three kind of talked a little bit down there. And because of our, Jeremy and my involvement and Marie's involvement in reaching outreach to the community, I thought, wow, you know, she's got a date. We're going to have 1,600 people there. Maybe this is an opportunity for us as a group to engage with the community and help with the outreach. So that's the sort of starting point that Andrea was able to invite Ashley to be here tonight. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll figure out a way to kind of support Andrea's work and our interests.
As she was talking, the thought that struck me was, is there an opportunity, or is it feasible or reasonable at some of these events, quite literally, to have a card table for the Clark County Clean Water Commission and a few materials and a couple of us standing there for a few hours to sort of engage the public, reach out, et cetera. Just any benefit, don't know. But that's what struck me.
Just attending.
No, but just exposure.
But I've seen literally a table with something that's set up. So people go, what the heck is the Clark County Clean Water Commission?
You would be more than welcome to have a table at the event. We've got lots of different community organizations and government agencies that are at the Earth Day event, so if you wanted to have a table there, that would be great.
Okay, I'd like to pipe up that my son and I did, he's a Boy Scout, so we've done a lot of the Earth Days.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great. It's a great day. And it's funny because they actually make you take breaks when you plant trees. I'm used to that. But yeah, it's great, great ground. So I would be happy to be there behind the card table and talk about the clean water. I think that's a good opportunity.
It would be important to maybe have some materials that we could have.
The handouts that we
It would be there just from a coordination standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
The date, the location, the block of time. Making sure we can have a table, who would attend, and what materials we have.
Right. At any of these events, is there a cap on the amount of volunteers that you guys could have? I mean, is there a separation between the public and needing actually volunteers?
It depends on the event. For the smaller events, we probably can only handle 60 volunteers or so. But these large events, it's usually 350 planting volunteers.
Do you guys ever fall short?
Sure. I mean, there's definitely the smaller everyday events. Sometimes we don't have as many people as we could handle, but usually we have a decent number. The knotweed events are usually the hardest to recruit people for, which I get. Most people want to come out and they want to plant trees. They don't want to kill knotweed. That's not, you know, that's not as glamorous. And then, you know, you start using herbicides and people go, I don't want to do that. Earth Day and the Make a Difference Day, we usually have no problems getting enough volunteers.
So potentially would we be maybe trying to something for April 22nd?
I'd like to make a motion that we have a table and we figure out a staffing schedule so that we can all participate in some way.
Just ask questions, like answer questions if people want to know what it is we do.
So I'm going to make that motion. If somebody wants to second that, we should do it.
It's a matter of gathering the information.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing what we could have, what would be involved.
Sure, yeah. So the fair itself is a four-hour event. It runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And we would provide a table and space under the tent and chairs. You would just need to bring whatever you want to put out on that table.
Sure.
I would recommend having some kind of kid activity of some sort just to draw people over to your table. And then you get the kids engaged playing a game, and then you talk to the adults about what it is you want to tell them. That tends to be the most effective. If you just have a table with a few pamphlets on it, you're going to get a lot of people coming over. But it's free to have a table for nonprofits and government agencies. So
does Public Works, Andrew, does Public Works have any Chotskys that can be, you know, like awarded as prizes to kids or something?
Possibly. I can talk to Jane about that.
Okay, yeah.
We have some.
So we could do some kind of spin the wheel thing.
Coloring books and stuff.
Pin the tail on the donkey thing, or I don't know, something like that.
Answer the question.
Yeah.
You know, or, yeah. I mean,
we have a spinning
wheel.
Could
be we could be creative about that. But
here's a really different one. You have two pictures. Which one is clean water?
Oh.
And there's some other county agencies that are going to be, park county agencies that will be there. So, you know, we can get you guys all kind of located together so that you're not
spread
out.
But, Eric Lambert definitely is having a table. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing, I can't remember if he's, since he is a bridge between both clean water and public health, he might be representing both.
Yeah, you know, I should have looked at that. I know that we have several different, you know, tables reserved from the different county programs. I know Eric's signed up to be there. Like we've had with the, you know, the park system, we'll have a table on the Parks Foundation, which is kind of separate. But I have to look and see. I can talk to you and look that up and see what all programs are going to be represented there. Veggie Management is usually have a table there.
Okay.
So ideally, we could certainly have two people.
Yeah, one or two probably be fine. And if you want to do shifts,
the three might start getting crowded.
Well,
it's 4 hours. You probably a little bit of a setup, and we'll tear it down. So 5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's
funny you're bringing Mike
into
sharing with the
family.
Yeah. Or we get two for 2 hours.
There's enough activity going. I went to this thing last year. It's pretty big. And you could spend easily a couple hours just walking around, checking out other tables, too. So we could, you know, kind of take little, you know, breaks and shifts and support each other in doing that. But hanging out. And then there's also, you know, eating lunch activities that are going on there, too, and some other stuff. It's pretty active, and there's a huge amount of public that shows up for this thing. A huge amount. And like Andrew was, Ashley was saying, 1,600 to 1,800 people come over there. So it's pretty big.
If the roads can really clog these, then like salmon swimming upstream.
Well, they're not necessarily 1,600 to 1,800 all at one time.
Not all 1,800 are volunteers. No. It's more like, you know, a couple, 200-300 might be volunteers, and the rest of them are just there to kind of gather information and see what the heck is up.
It would be nice for it to opportunity for the public to know we're available to go speak to their groups, because you do have a lot of different scout groups and all kinds of Lions Club and stuff. So
sure. To that end, we could have a little something that they could take with them. Contact.
Yes. Yeah. A bunch of Andrew's cards.
No, exactly.
Small things that are being made. as far as... But they also are detrimental to the projects in that, you know, we plant small baby trees and those are the ones they want to munch on the most. So we try to do a lot of exclusion fencing and tubes around the trees to prevent the beaver from taking out all of our trees. It works with varying success. Some projects we have trapped beaver to relocate them. Some we don't. We surprisingly don't get too many questions from the public about it. We tend to get more questions from fellow ecologists than we do the public, the beaver. But go back to the other question as far as the data. So I guess our data on our personal projects, we don't have long enough records to really have robust findings, but there are scientific studies that have shown the benefits of trees, and so we're kind of using those as our rationale for doing the work that we do, and we're building our data to show, you know, to show that what we're doing has had benefits, if that makes sense.
Yes, I think that's an interesting, at least from my perspective, you want to do it in a fun way, but it's important for people to understand why it is they're doing what it is we're asking them to do on a volunteer basis.
Right, yeah, and kind of along those lines, so you were saying that we make you take breaks at all of our events. So at the smaller events that we do have like a break in the middle of the day, and we try to do like a little education piece so that we're teaching the volunteers about something about, you know, the program and why we do what we do. So we try to add that educational component. Same reason that we go out to like fairs and festivals and things like that and have, you know, have kids' activities and informational tables out. So we're trying to really spread the word to the public about why we're doing what we're doing, and we're not just doing it, you know, we have fun doing it. There's a reason for it.
Right. Thanks for the presentation, and thanks for doing what you're doing. Sounds really awesome.
I like it. I enjoy it. Thanks.
Yeah. Actually, how long have you been doing this?
I have been with the utility. Well, I've been an employee for 5.5 years, and I started out there as an AmeriCorps, so 6 years at the utility, 5.5 as an employee.
So you got to get to the ministry all the time?
No, I'm mostly in the office. I get out to some of the events, but I'm primarily desk bound, unfortunately.
Any other questions?
The best place to just take a look at everything would be the streamteam.net.
Yeah.
The second one.
Streamteam.net is a great
website to go check out. We kind of redesigned our website,
but
things are
still kind of awesome. But when you have all those, I've got to get into this. Awesome.
Yeah,
thank you.
Cool.
Thank you,
Ashley.
And you can also always, if you have questions, feel free to call me or email me. And that's the email if you want to start getting emails about volunteer opportunities. That's what you're signing up for. You can always tell me to stop.
Right.
I don't sell your email
or do anything. Darn. I'm going to get a list of a couple thousand people. It's a different thing.
No, thank you. Sorry. Well, thank you, Ashley.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, so do we want to do this? Do we want to...
Sounds like we have a big, yes, interest.
Yeah. Yeah. So second motion vote on it.
Right.
Do we have to
I suggest is that...
Well, I think if we have a... If we're
we have a forum, then we have to...
If we get the information lined up so that we know the details so that people can then confirm
we can put some conditions on it, but I think...
Okay.
I think we ought to have it in the since we operate on Robert's rules, right? we probably ought to
communication or communication partner, and it also happens before the next meeting. So that's right.
That's one of the problems.
I could commit with my children to the Earth Day. We were going to go anyway. So setting up a booth and having something planned that my kids could also participate, like if they wanted to participate and come up with some ideas to get the crowd over, and just big signs with the CWC, and so people can ask questions and just say we're an advisory board, and this is what we do. We just contact the public on what,
what
we're doing.
What materials we might be able to get to put.
Sometimes hand out something else.
Sort of a child's...
Yeah, I can have the kids help make signs. You can make it...
So something to attract, to your point.
I'm going to kind of take the head on that because when I work on it with the kids, I'm going to try to do my best to get that together.
Okay.
So you want to make a formal motion?
A formal motion is that we're going to commit to having a table there.
I second that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Any abstentions? None. We're good.
We're good.
Great. We'll do it. So now you have a commitment. We're going to be there. We need a table. And then we'll figure out the details by email as we proceed forward. But
just check your Gmail. We'll get a list of times in case people only want to do it 2 hours.
Sweet.
Thank you.
Okay. Should we move to the vacant position discussion? So we have Kate now to fill her position.
And we've been given the go-ahead that we can use the same pool of applicants to select the third position. So we have gone through, since the last meeting, the January meeting, we've gone through interviews. We interviewed 5 applicants. There had been a 6th, but this person dropped out, so we interviewed 5. And then made a recommendation to the county manager. Now the county manager has forwarded on to the board, and the 2 appointments will be announced at the hearing on March 7th, so next week. So
letters already went out to those people and they've accepted?
No, they're going out. That is the official, we're giving you the letter.
Oh.
The letter will go out that day or around then.
Okay.
So that is why it would have been nice to have them here, but not quite official yet. So whereas we just found out about Kate's resignation, but now we have permission to use the same pool of applicants, so we should be.
So are there 3 out of the 5?
Yes.
There were 4 out of 5 that would be the best fit. And even a 5th wasn't too bad.
So can you slide that 3rd one into this?
No. There has to be at least a week. So there's a whole process that has to be gone through. But it should be shortly. In the next couple of weeks, we should be able to be at, they'll be on the consent agenda as well. So
the anticipation then would be for the next
meeting,
May,
the
three
would be on board.
Okay.
So during the May meeting, then, are we expecting that that's when we would elect a new vice chair?
Well, if someone would want to volunteer to be the vice chair, we could do that tonight.
I'm going to suggest that there is a party currently of the available commissioners that would be interested that we should move forward so that, A, we have that second person in place. Number 2, my experience would suggest that the new commissioners have absolutely no clue or idea as to.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I would suggest for the good of the commission.
That yeah, that would be hard to step in, serve as vice chair or something.
So the question is there anybody who'd like to have a name in the back?
Absolutely.
All you would like to
yeah, no, I know I've been absent a few meetings, but I've been doing some work which I've been excited to kind of tell you guys about. And going forward, I don't foresee any issues anymore.
Okay.
So this is something that, you know, I love to do, and I've still been working on it, so absolutely I'd love to come in and say.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to volunteer?
Mark? Mark, do you want to be a vice chair?
Traveling man?
Yeah, I think it's not something I need to wait till next year. I think this is not something I can commit to at this time, so.
Dave, are you interested?
I'm engaged in a campaign, so.
Okay. Oh.
Jeremy?
You know I'm campaigning.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Would you like to vote in secret, or shall we do a show of hands?
No, I think we can do it by acclamation.
Acclamation?
Yeah.
Oh, proclamation?
Acclamation, right. Yeah.
Everyone in favor, raise your hand.
Yeah.
Mark?
Can you raise your hand, Mark?
Okay.
You raise this virtual
all,
hand.
All in
That's
favor.
That's a hand, Mark.
So Holly Norris is now our new vice chair.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on to the next item. The annual report is going to the council. I'm going to present it on the 15th. Is that still correct?
We don't have it's not official yet. That's okay. The date that we're going for.
Okay. I'm still waiting.
And unfortunately this week there's no quorum, so nothing is happening on this floor. That's the date that I've requested. We don't know yet. But
so the target
is
called tentative.
Yes.
Yeah. March 15th?
Yes.
And it would be a work session.
Work session. So what I'll report highlights, just not the whole thing to bore people, but to on the PowerPoint, just real simple, the highlights. Who we are, what we did, what we'd like to do, what would you like to see us do to the board. So.
And they will, the counselors.
The counselors.
The counselors would receive the report prior to the work session.
Yes. Not the PowerPoint, but the report.
Yeah.
So when we know the date, we will let you know if you'd like to come attend the meeting.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay.
So regarding the next item, working group, so it's not clear in my mind who's on what groups there will be, and given now that we will have three new members, would it be appropriate perhaps at the May meeting to attempt to
reorganize?
Update.
Yeah. Yeah.
The working teams and outline expectations and so forth.
Yes, because at this point, the communications team is the only one that still has the original members. So.
Right.
It'd be tough for new people to go in there and jump in. Although, I mean, they're all really gung-ho. I think there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm. But
if we perhaps at that May meeting, a brief explanation of three different groups.
Maybe even a little presentation.
Who has an interest in which of the groups, and then how would you then, as chair, would perhaps like to assign the people based on the mix of knowledge, experience, longevity.
Okay. I will think about that and come up with something.
Is your partner, you were...
Yeah, yes. Gary and I were on the outreach effort,
Oh, so Mark is all by himself. And he's already working on his goals.
Yeah, I sat in with him on research once. So, I mean, that could be something I can do.
I gave him feedback on what he said.
That could transfer research.
Okay.
And then we could split, in consideration, and the three new people could each be on it.
Yeah,
we have
probably you're going to want to spread them out. But
three of them new people have outreach kind of background, so they might want to jump on that.
Or they could just all three be together and go.
I got to tell you, all three. I mean, so Marie and I interviewed four of them, and you were involved with one. And the four that we interviewed, I can tell you, every single one of them was pretty sharp. And they've been engaged in this kind of world a little bit for a while. So I'm pretty pleased that they could come in and step in anywhere and they'd be okay with whatever they chose to engage in.
Jeremy, did you
want to
talk about the research goals?
Well, I mean, I can talk a little bit about it. Andrew's provided us lots of documents and line items, so we reviewed them. Sorry, we kept the phone so long.
It was just the hour.
So just get familiar with all the budget items and what they were, and how they were appropriated to all the different categories, I guess, areas. I think in any request, contact too that we can go to ask additional questions.
Yeah, and because did Jeff email you, or I know he and I discussed it, and I can't remember.
I don't know if Mark heard anything from Jeff. I don't know if we reached out to Jeff yet.
Perspective, the community gives us feedback that there are some things
Yeah, I think one of the other items on there was connecting with other associations, especially the lawn care providers, and discussing best management practices on fertilizers and chemicals. We got some of the items also, as well as other outreach into how other communities work on these programs, and then also Heritage Farm, just seeing the research efforts in Heritage Farm.
So these are some things that I've been, as a part of the outreach team, just kind of thinking about and considering what I can do as part of the outreach team to reach out. So I've been in contact with the Washington Green Schools program, emailing them. I'm set up on the volunteer list, but that's, you know, that's kind of doing some volunteer things. Down the road, I was, you know, hoping to do some projects, but that's definitely going to be down the road as far as the schools go. I set up myself on some other volunteer lists for like the forestry team. I'm on there to be planting trees, that sort of thing. But I wanted to, like, what can I do to really get out there and inform the public and the you know, the homeowners, like really be, you know, in the public. So I just kind of started picking up garbage along the streets and along the rivers and stuff when I take my hikes and stuff. I also, in my research, I found a group that's called River Junkies. And what they do is they get together and they pick up, you know, garbage along the streams and stuff like that. And if you post a picture of yourself and you send it in, they actually, they choose somebody every week. And they'll send out, like, gift cards or something like that. So I've just been posting that kind of stuff on social media. Just, you know, I'm Holly, I'm a Clean Water Commissioner. This is what I'm doing today. Did you guys know about this? And so another thing with the homeowners and stuff like that, you know, just kind of thinking about where I can outreach. I have a lot of friends that do landscaping, and they have a lot of landscaping business, that sort of thing, and the HOA, I found it to be incredibly difficult to get a hold of those guys. I don't know how they collaborate or what they do, but I feel like that's kind of a dead end. So
Clark County Homeowners Association?
They don't return calls, they're...
That's what we were...
Then we presented.
You're not presenting.
You guys presented them?
Yeah.
Now, is there one homeowners association? Because there's an individual, I've been kind of reaching out to the ones that, you know, well, I'll go to the community and get phone numbers.
There's an oversight group for Clark County.
Like all the heads of the homeowners association, and then they go back and they have their own group of homeowners.
But that doesn't, there's no way that covers all homeowners associations.
Right, right. And there's...
Because there's a lot of HOAs in Clark County that are dead end.
Well, as far as
they
like,
exist, but don't,
yeah,
don't do that.
For setting up something like, you know, to get the community involved, something like, because on a personal level, really all we can do is take care of our area, our homes, and what we do on a day-to-day basis. You know, we can't infiltrate the big corporations and impermeable surfaces, the pollution on a large scale. It's basically what we can do, you know, personally. So, something as far as putting up booths, like in the community where it's like keep it real. If you're going to, you know, make changes to your home and landscape around it, make sure that it's natural. You know, reduce any kind of pavements, stuff like that. So some kind of workshop, mm-hmm, something that outreaches as far as the school. So it's kind of what I was thinking about, just a homeowners community thing. So where it's just, you know, about keeping it real, keeping the landscape natural from a homeowner and personal standpoint. So those are just some ideas. Again, I'm just kind of posting this stuff on social media, inviting my friends to the volunteer things, you know, when those come up. So, yeah. That's what I've been doing. Yeah, so yes, picking up garbage, you know, and posting that and showing people what you're doing, invite friends to come out, and then the homeowners. So I think we're going to make the most difference. Yeah. And
the only thing having the booth would be able to make a lot of contacts.
Absolutely, yeah, too.
And then hopefully get invites to come speak to the different groups that are out there.
I was also working on maybe a YouTube, something like a collaboration, and then just, I don't know, maybe... So it was an idea for the future with the Green Schools program because they, you know, were kind of interested in like a presentation, but that's, I'm not even close to that yet, but doing a YouTube, and if the kids can find it and comment, or how many people kind of get involved in. So just kind of been shooting some ideas.
Have you researched to see if there's any YouTubes out there now on environmental clean water?
Yes. There's lots. It's more environmentalist kind of stuff. It ranges, picking up garbage to, education they use.
Consider reinventing the wheel, if we could just piggyback on.
That's just some ideas, seeing which ones are easiest to do and which ones, can take up. Oh, the watersheds that are all over Clark County, a lot of them are, they're garbage everywhere. I know it happens, I don't know, we talked about this meeting before. There is somebody that takes care of it in the city, but, every day they build up with garbage. And the drains are clogged and stuff like that. So even just, getting a team together of, just my friends and stuff and walking around and just putting that on social media, that's the best I got so far. So it's just trying to show people what they can do.
Maybe that's one of the things we can challenge the homeowners associations to incorporate. When I'm driving along the highway, and I see this, this 2 miles is cleaned up by, Joe's Hamburger Shack or whatever it is, right? Maybe they only go out 2 or 3 times a year, but when we're talking about some of these places, people have an interest in keeping the community beautified to a certain extent, it's a nice big step up.
It might be a little difficult to kind of get that organized where we start and, for what we do, but
Well, I know my neighborhood association did clean up like that, picking up garbage. And then my son and I volunteered with the Vancouver Columbia Springs, and we were picking up garbage by the river.
What was it?
It's the Water Education Center down in Vancouver.
The Water Resource
Center? Yeah, the Water Resource Center. And that was on Martin Luther King Day. So a lot of these holidays where the kids are off from school, they have all these organizations have some really nice events.
There's a lot of volunteer opportunities. Just trying to fit it into the schedule and which ones are going to have the most impact. And as far as outreach, the best I can think of is just getting there myself, invite friends, post on social media.
Been busy doing any partnerships or?
I emailed some people. It must be something about my name or my email address. Most of them not.
No. Okay. So we'll regroup and get our new folks and get some goals for each group, like. Research has. So the other groups will wait until we have people to help formulate them. Okay. Do you want to report on the stormwater partnerships Southwest Washington? Andrew, you were there?
I was briefly there, but I didn't know if that would fall under the working group if that was part of communication.
Yeah, I didn't bring those documents with me, but let's see. Of Southwest Washington is a new program that Eric Lambert is heading up. And he invited people from a large number of organizations to come, and the idea is to have a central place to collaborate and try to coordinate a little bit. So there were a number of people from Clark County. There were a couple of people from Battleground. from Washougal, from Camas, from Public Health, from Clark Conservation Corps, from Watershed Alliance, Columbia River Alliance, Columbia Springs, Clark County Public Health, State Department of Ecology, La Center, City of Vancouver, Ashley from the CPUC, Vancouver Public Works, and the Water Resources Center. And everybody's got kind of a slightly different focus. So the idea was to bring us together in a collaborative sort of way, so that partnering between organizations and amongst ourselves could create an effective way to not only do some marketing together, co-marketing, but also branding with one goal in mind, because we all have a goal of having clean water. And there were a number of people that kind of outlined some of the issues, some of the problem areas that they have. And interestingly, most of the problem areas are centered around the idea of outreach and trying to get outreach to not only the communities, but even in some cases to high schools. And we talked a little bit about the NPDES permitting process. We talked about outreach from a standpoint of not only outreach to adults, but also outreach to children. We talked about having a collaborative calendar so that we could get events like the Earth Day event out there and getting people involved. But also, across all of the various agencies, having consistency within the context of what our messaging is. Apparently there's some inconsistencies that we could kind of try to work towards. So that regardless of who specifically is doing the outreach, the messaging is the same. And so that's pretty much the summary of that meeting. The meeting lasted for 2 hours, roughly. And really good group of people. And like I said, Andrea and I were able to get Ashley to come and talk to us tonight so that, you know, collectively we could do something and participate in that effort as well. And so I'm really thrilled that we're going to step up and engage ourselves with that.
So what was the net takeaway? Was there an action or actions? Or was it just a kumbaya?
So the initial, this was an initial meeting. Okay. It was an initial meeting. And the proposal at the end of the meeting is that this group of people reconvene once a quarter. So Eric Lambert has that on his agenda. And I kind of put it out there, well, you know, maybe once every 4 months, three times a year, and, you know, bridge the summer so that you don't lose a lot of people during summer holidays. So maybe if we met in May and then late September, we'd be able to bridge that. But that's on his plate. That's on his agenda. He's the one that's in charge of this idea of partnering to be effective with our stormwater partners of Southwestern Washington. And of course, a lot of the activities and things that the groups do are in the summer, so you know we don't want to detract from that. But it's in his ballpark. So it's his baby. So it's his baby. It's his baby. But I believe that he learned a lot from having us there, and I was pleased that I could participate. Just to be there to listen and hear what everybody else had to say, because, you know, for what we do and what we're even capable or able to do, were pretty limited, but for everybody else that was there, and there must have been there must have been 25 other people that were there. Dean Benning was there, Andrea was there, there were some other folks, but for the 25 people that were there, this is their full-time gig. This is what they do. And they're all involved in a variety of activities where we all of us have some overlap. So, so I was thrilled. I thought it was a worthwhile meeting to go to.
Are people really giving conflicting information? Like, some groups would say this is okay to put down the drain, and other groups would say no. I mean, is that kind of?
It didn't get to that level of specificity.
But they knew there were conflicts in what was being told.
They knew that there were inconsistencies in the messages that were getting out there.
David, do you have any questions? Did you get some names as far as recommendations? Like, if I have a question about who I should contact regarding this question, could I email you?
I wrote down first names, and I tried to keep up with where they came from. But I don't have any way to contact any of them particularly. I think the contact that we should be pursuing is Eric.
Yeah, so Eric is Clark County employee.
He's part of public works.
Yeah, he's part of public works, but he also is part of public health. So he was hired in December.
Eric Wilmer?
Yes. So, and I can definitely either if I can give you any contact.
I'll ask my commission first. Picking up the communication there, and if you guys don't have the answer, then I'll go there.
No, and actually, because Ashley said that they were having the Earth Day event, that was sort of the impetus to ask her to come tonight because it's, between our two sessions. But there are a number of other people that were at this meeting that would be worthwhile to have as presenters for us in future meetings as well. People like the Watershed Alliance or the Columbia River Watershed Group, or the Columbia Springs people, or even some of the cities that were there, whether it was Vancouver or La Center or Richfield or Battleground or Camas or Washougal, any of those people would be thrilled to probably come and kind of give us an update on what they're about.
The more we know, the more we
care. Yeah, the more we know, the more we know. And the more we know, the more we find out how little we know.
So we move on to the priority-based budgeting.
So basically the entire county is working with a consultant. They've hired a consultant to start to change the budgeting. In the past it's been incremental budgeting, which is it's a simple process that's commonly used, but it's starting to become, there are some flaws to it, and that this priority-based budgeting is starting to become a best practice. So incremental budgeting doesn't address current priorities. It doesn't link results and council priorities to resource allocation. And it does not provide strategic tools to address persistent structural challenges. So what it does is that it identifies top strategic priorities. And what you do is you rank programs by their services. And so basically each department is then looking... Each of our departments are then looking at each of our programs, and we're just starting this process where we're having to break things down, but you don't want to break it down too small, but you also don't want to look, you want to be looking at the individual pieces, and then there's a set of criteria that you rank these, and then
there are different ways to analyze it so that then you can look at in different quartiles. And not that you would ever, it's an informative method. It's not necessarily that if you're in the bottom quartile, then that means this program is just not useful, but you can start to ask questions of, well, should we be, you know, what should we be doing differently? Is this necessary? It may still be necessary, and at least though you have the knowledge of why we invest in this program and do it, why the county does do this kind of thing. One of the criteria options, or one of the criteria is that is very heavily weighted is if it's mandated, whether it's on the federal level or the state level. So that does come into play as well. So certainly the Clean Water Division, which is mandated under the Clean Water Act, that's an example of that we're going to have, we will fulfill that criteria. So it just seems important to know that the entire county is embarking on this path, but it's just starting to get rolled out. So.
I'm curious, Andy, how involved you were in this process. So I've been involved in this type of thing in the past, and the concern about priority-based approach is it has a tendency to overlook the long-term aspect because you're focused on sort of urgency, near-term, you know, definable. So you'll be looking out 6 months, 12 months. As you start getting beyond 12 months in a priority-based focus system, they get really that deep, then you're not looking at, Mark mentioned earlier, and we've discussed in this group in the past, looking at some of these things 5, 10, 20 years out, trying to plan for the long term. So just a point of concern. Hopefully that comes up, and it doesn't mean because they move to a priority-based system that you forego long-term, but there is an increased tendency to focus on the here and now. It becomes more of a crisis management budgeting process, and that's would be my only sort of concern. I'm sure they're aware of it, and I'm sure it won't happen, but just for whatever it's worth, just maybe try and make sure that's in the mix, in the pot.
That makes sense to me, and I am involved in the process on a certain level, I'm going to keep that in mind, and if I have an opportunity to either ask that question or even...
It would be good for you at least to know about it,
yeah.
And, you know, how they've weighed that, I presume that they have, but... That's my only concern based on past experience. They can go down a path that's not always the best.
Yeah, I mean, and I would imagine there's never going to be a one-size-fits-all or the perfect fit. So,
things do change. I mean, clearly, in any of your budgets, you know, something will go south, something will have a major problem that has to be dealt with, and you know, you've got to rejuggle. So that becomes priority-based budgeting by necessity.
Right.
So, yeah.
What's their timeline to change over the budget? Budget every 2 years.
Yeah, we budget every 2 years, so that's why it's starting to get rolled out this year, so that for the next biennial budget, it's already starting to inform, but we're just in the early phases, so it's to get ready for
the next time. The county announced they had a budget projected for a shortfall, correct?
Yes.
As well of, remember how much? I don't remember. It was a fairly substantial, like 12 million or something.
On the divisional level, I get so focused on that.
Which then prompted them to raise the the property taxes, they took the maximum allowable 1% increase across the board in the county to try to generate some additional funds as well. So, of course, everybody's asking for more money, all the way across the board, school districts.
A lot of schools need to be built and added.
Well, maybe.
Fixed.
Hawkinson was the only one.
Yeah, they didn't want to put an artificial turf on it. Yeah, but there's a whole
lot. That's it. Then, yeah.
But yeah, when you look at
the growth that's happening.
Right? Federal government intake, state. Everything else, our illustrious governor has proposed a carbon tax and an income tax, which are both voted down by the people, but he knows better than we do. And so, anyway, there's just lots of drains on the system. So.
Yeah, I would second what Dick is talking about there. I would also kind of reinforce the notion that a climate against budget or a zero-based budget has a benefit there, that it kind of brings the kind of realism to how you're actually expending the monies in the county. And so what happens in an incremental type of thing where you do some kind of cost of living increase, if you will, you end up with these buckets of money and divisions or line items that no longer apply based upon what your expenditure was in prior biennial period. So there's a you don't have to want a more realistic budget when you do things this way forward, but it's there's more benefit to it. So it's pros and cons and so we just have to be cognizant of the cons while we get the benefits of it.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I'm glad that you brought that up.
Okay.
So then the next, that's really it, I guess, on the priority-based budgeting. So then the only other thing that seemed important to let you guys know is for the entire Department of Public Works, the department, we've gotten a new organization chart, and I'll just take it out. Yeah, it's very small. But what you will see is that, and Mark, I can email this to you. Unfortunately, you can't look at it right this moment, but the far left column, clean water. So, Dean, we now have wastewater operations have now been moved under the clean water division, whereas it used to be its own division. So some of the reasons that there's been this reorganization in public works is, first, that when the reorganization happened and vegetation management and clean water and then a portion of enhancement and permitting were also all brought into public works. And public works is one of, if not the largest department in the county. And there's only a director. There are not assistant directors. And so our director, Keith Henderson, he has a lot that he has to deal with. And so over the course of these last few months, they've really been trying to figure out a way to spread the load in a way that makes sense. So now you have these division managers that and they've consolidated some of the divisions under these six division managers. They've also added a few more of the administrative staff have gone under the office manager, who is support Pete, the director. So then there was also just looking at making sure that, as you can see, they're also, if you can read, it's very small print, I know, also about how many direct reports are to each division manager. So they're, while trying to keep in mind what each of these divisions and then subsections and subsections, what their functions are and keeping them together, but then you don't want to make one division too large. So it just seemed important to let you know that happened.
Wow.
Cool.
This is awesome.
Is this something I can share with my coworkers? Not yet.
I should probably ask. Let me ask Dean to make sure.
Back in my world, span of control of six was about the maximum you'd want any one individual to have, unless a role was pretty minor, you know.
Well, and if you, so then you have, so you've got the division managers in the yellow, then the darker green are the section managers.
Right.
So you at least then have a number of section managers, and then you've got subsections that might that have a manager or might
right.
have a lead
right.
that reports to the section manager and then to the division.
Yeah.
It's trying to figure
that.
Out, okay. Figure
that out.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's a lot
of people. Well, it's a big organization with 307 people, basically. With 327 people. 20 vacancies.
Yeah, should you just count that or is that written somewhere? Oh, there it is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Quick.
He's a master of all.
Yeah. Thank you. I think Dustin Hoffman and what was that, you know?
Rain Man.
Keymark. You know, at some point your Keymark would no longer exist and people in the future would go, what the heck is a Keymark?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not even sure there's one in
Clark
County. No. Did they close that one in Jensen Beach?
There's one over in Portland just off of Airport.
Which is not many Sears left in your baby.
They're off of... Killingsville,
okay.
Okay, thank you.
It's east of 205. You're really digging for it.
Okay.
I'm not. I don't go there, and I don't go to Walmart, and I don't go to Target.
So, open discussion among the commissioners. Does anyone have anything to bring up to the group?
I was wondering, I saw in the January meeting notes for the training for the new, who does that? The training for the new commissioners.
Typically it's been the chair in the past and the liaison, and we just kind of go over the notebook and explain the mission and the rules.
We spent about an hour. We put that in place a couple of years ago so that just a little background, a little thing. When we met with you, we sat down and just kind of, here's the binder, walked through the stuff, talked about the program, tried to answer some questions. Now, training is probably a misnomer. It's sort of a
familiarization.
Yes,
orientation.
Orientation would probably be a much better term.
Well, I guess in trying to kind of keep up and get caught up, it sounds like most of you guys are going to come in and just, you know, hit the ground running. There was a couple things like, you know, the permit fees that I still don't understand, like how the clean water fees stuff. I found it kind of difficult to, you know, get all that information in between the meetings. I feel like I'm falling behind a little bit. So as far as that, I guess I'm going to be emailing you a lot, probably.
Put a list of questions together.
You know, if not the next meeting, the one after, someone from the county, Rod, or...
Well, even between them, you know,
someone to explain the whole thing.
Maybe.
I think we've had one maybe 2 years ago when they explained, you know, what's the permit, what does it mean, what does that mean to us, what does it mean to the public, why do we have these fees?
Okay.
How would the fees arrive at, how could they be, you know, some of the history background?
That would be...
Anyone for the... folks that have heard it before, it's a good refreshment.
How did the homeowners, how did that go as far as with the homeowners association? As far as, do you have any contacts that I could?
They love to hear it, but no one wanted us to come back for a second visit or follow up.
That group, it's
neighborhood.
Clark County Neighborhood Association. They meet in Hazeldale. Periodically. They do it a couple times a year.
But even as like even in different areas, you know, in working, I've had some experience with the homeowners association, and in my experience is the no experience. If there were, you know, I feel like if I'm going to do anything on a neighborhood scale, it can have to be without them or around them.
Well,
it's been my experience.
My experience is that the homeowners is too granular, and at best, you try to get the neighborhood associations. and then hope that it filters out because they have members that are in an active HOA. Because I don't know what the percentage of inactive HOAs is, but it is.
It's a lot, yeah.
Most people detest homeowners.
Yeah. Because they
perceive it's heavy control, heavy-handed, you know, et cetera, and they don't like that.
Right. Yeah. And the neighborhood groups, so Vancouver City has these little neighborhood groups. So, for example, we're in the Esther Short neighborhood at the moment. Haw is just north of us a little bit. And to the east, on the other side of Mill Plain, is Arnada. And there probably are like 40 or 50 little neighborhoods in Vancouver proper. In the county, there are also other neighborhoods. And then I'm not sure about the other cities, whether they have divided it up as neighborhoods or not.
And let's say if we wanted to maybe drop off some flyers on what they can do. I mean, we don't need permission for that, do we? To if we came up with, you know, something like as far as, you know, landscaping ideas.
To create our own, I think, would be...
Right.
Historically, we could not create our own. Anything that this group was going to hand out or present had to be pre-cleared by the department.
Okay.
Which is... one of the reasons it took so darn long to get the last site set done. There was a bunch of change going on, and it all had to be signed off and approved because we are representing as a non-employee, so we have to be very careful to see what we say, promise.
So that's, as far as, like, you know, the social media thing's okay. You know, just taking pictures, kind of showing people what I'm doing on a personal level, right?
Be careful about not representing what your opinions and your views are relative to the county of the commission.
No.
But certainly you are a member of, which
that,
is fine.
Yeah, that's the extent that it goes. Those guidelines, those are kind of stuff that leads me too. So,
okay.
As far as, because when I was looking at...
when Dad asked.
Yeah, yeah. When I was looking at our main...
We can sit down and have coffee someday.
I would love that.
Just do it informally.
Okay. Real quick, when I was looking at our main...
And there's a lot of on the Clean Water website, there's the links to all the brochures that have already been produced.
Oh, awesome.
Lawn care, pet waste, auto, there's probably six or seven.
Yeah, there's a whole list of...
Yeah.
So because we deal strictly with stormwater, as it says, you know, the threat to water quality, impervious surfaces, increasing the amount of stormwater runoff. Well, the impervious surfaces, we really can't, from my knowledge so far, can't do anything about. I mean, we don't deal with big corporations, we don't have anything to do, so that we can't really touch on. The runoff that causes erosion from the very increasing sediments of waterways, yeah, that's, you know, pine trees and that sort of thing. But I was still even a little confused on you know, the fact that it's the dirt or the sediments of the waterways.
Well, ours can be feedback and comment and suggestion and recommendation relative to potential policies or regulations that might be considered by, in this case, the county. If this commission said we wanted to impose, we suggest that there be a fee on every tire sold in Clark County to generate revenue to more fully fund programs.
Okay.
You know, that type of thing, this commission could make
a recommendation.
A recommendation.
And actually, a year and a half ago, when Don Benton was still here, still in charge of what at that time was called the Environmental
Department of Environmental Services.
Right? That, you know, we had a discussion about the fees and the fee schedules. And he came and he sat right over there in that corner. We had that conversation.
This department actually had gone through a process of identifying potential pollutants. And the question became a matter of not only what are they, how can you identify and track them?
Right.
Are they measurable? With the thought line being, how do you, if you're going to impose a cost, do you do it across every property parcel in the county, which is how it's done, or do you try to find a way to provide some weighting to those that are generating or helping create the nature of the problem? But then how do you track it and how do you
collect
on it? What's the cost of collecting on it? But they did go through an entire pretty exhaustive process at the time. Doesn't mean it doesn't get revisited. But to your point, or at that point, this commission, of course, being advisory,
right,
can recommend and suggest that things that might affect policy, regulation, or even law.
Yeah. And then it goes to the board of counselors and it's up to
which is one of the reasons that we originally formed the research group to make sure that any recommendations this group ever made were based as much as possible on facts and data and not emotion or philosophical.
And I like that. So knowing where to focus, because the impervious surfaces, it's like, we can't do anything with that. The pollution, you know, it's kind of a wide range, it's still kind of a personal level, so.
You can do something with, when we're talking about what people can do themselves.
Right.
As far as impervious. You know, how they're going to landscape their yard. So, I mean, on a very small level, we can do the outreach and talk about what you can do as a person.
You
know, as far as like, for example, Chotsky's, you know, maybe there's a group that has dog waste pickup bags, you know, the little rolls of those things, and that might be something that would be very applicable, right? Because, you know, we're always asking people to clean up after their pet waste.
Yeah.
So if there were these little rolls of dog waste pickup bags, you know, that could be like spin the wheel, you know, and if you land on the dog waste pickup bag, you could have a choice or whatever, you know, and but that might be a Chotsky, or a pen might be a Chotsky, or, you know, whatever, right?
So long as the object you're handing out doesn't in itself produce the kind of waste product
that we don't want.
Then those little baggies are everywhere. They put those rolls in.
Many years ago, I worked for a company that had developed a starch product that could be used to create what looked like plastic bags.
But they
broke down. So given some, you know, some time, some water, some heat, etc. I mean, in normal process, they actually was not a plastic; it was a starch, it was a plain starch. And you know, it was still too expensive to produce in order to get businesses to actually purchase the product. But it was the cost was the driving factor. So, anyway.
Okay. Any other comments among the commissioners? Well, I open it to public comment, and I see there's no public here, so we close that.
Yeah, it's packed
the house. It's packed the house.
Well,
the weather.
If it's about money, there might be people.
And when the weather's bad, people don't come. Okay.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Anyone second?
Sure. Yes. Second.
This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you for your patience for the conference call.
I hope you weren't like doing something else.